Well, hello and welcome to ASI Cast number 178. I'm Richard Marks, ASI's Research Director, and joining me today, all the way from Brisbane in Australia, is radiofuturologist James Cridland. So, welcome, James.
Greetings, thank you so much for asking me.
Now, James has been a regular speaker at our radio and audience conference over the years, and in Venice next month, he'll be introducing a session that's focused specifically on developments in podcasting and the implications for measurement. So we're going to be talking about that. But James is also the founder and editor of Pod News. Can you tell us a little bit about the origins of the publication and the podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a weekly no, it's not. It's a daily newsletter about podcasting and on demand. You can spot that this may be a man who is quite jet lagged. So it's a daily newsletter all about podcasting and on demand, which is also available as a podcast as well. And actually, the idea came to me while I was at a radio conference in Los Angeles. I think it was called the Worldwide Radio Summit. And I and Ben Cooper from Radio One may have been the worldwide bit. And there was a friend of mine in the bar afterwards saying, "Where do you get your news about podcasting?" And I said, "Oh, it's an interesting question. I can't think of anywhere." And I suddenly realized that there was an opportunity here. And 2.5 weeks later, had started it. So yeah, so that's where it ended up coming from. It now goes to around 33,000 people every single day, plus more on the podcast version. So it seems to be something that people want, which is nice.
That's great. We'll put a link to that in the show notes so people can sign up. And I think when you said weekly, you may have been referring to the podcast, perhaps, because I think there's a related podcast, isn't there?
Yes, there is. There's a weekly podcast called the Pod News Weekly Review, which I will be recording in half an hour. Yes, where we do, rather more longer form interviews with people involved in the podcasting world. Very excited that last week we managed to get Maya Prohovnik from Spotify on, which, she's the person who is in charge of the Spotify podcast app, the podcast bit inside the Spotify app. So, yeah, so some really nice big names in there, which is good.
Well, we can tell you do a lot of podcasting because those who are watching the video feed will see a very impressive looking microphone to your left. So clearly that gets a lot of use. But turning to our conference in Venice, you're going to be introducing, as I said, a session in our radio and audio conference, which is very specifically on podcasting. We've got a number of guests lined up, but to get some context for that, what do you think are the major global trends in podcasting and audio more generally that we need to be aware of at the moment? The real sort of big picture stuff.
Yeah, I mean, last year saw, for example, on-demand audio overtaking live audio in the US. So on-demand audio is a very important part of the audio landscape. And I suspect that we will, clearly see more of that in more countries to come. I think really, what we're seeing in terms of trends from podcasting is we are seeing an end, in most cases, an end to exclusive shows only on one platform. So this podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and that's really how we know that podcasting works. That's how we know how successful, a successful show will be available on as many different platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, many others, as possible. And so we're seeing more and more of that. Spotify very much reversing out of their plans for exclusivity last year. But I think we're also seeing things around programmatic advertising. So advertising, which isn't the same for everybody who listens, but is specifically targeted at me and where I am in the world, and perhaps what other things the systems know about me. So programmatic advertising is very interesting, as well as the measurement that goes alongside that. And actually working out, for example, how successful a podcast advert is, but also working out how successful a podcast is. And there are plenty of complications because podcasting is a very open ecosystem. And so I think, podcasting is a fascinating thing to have a look at in terms of measurement and information.
Yes, I've been meaning to ask you about specifically about advertising on podcasts because it's clearly something where people have worked out that having the if they can having the hosts integrated with the advertising seems to be seen as effective. So having the actual presenters, read out the product, or actually do in some cases do some quite creative sort of skits around the product, so it integrates into the program. What I'm not sure about, I don't know if you're aware, is how much research has been done about where podcast advertising works differently to radio in terms of things like frequency. Because, if I hear a podcast ad talk one more time about NordVPN, I'm going to go mad, because they seem to repeat exactly the same treatment. So you know
Yes.
that next minute and a half, the presenter on The Rest Is Entertainment is going to be talking about how great Sky Glass is, with exactly the same dialogue between. So it's almost encouraging people to skip. I just wonder, because surely podcasts must have a different frequency to radio, where people are tuning in and out all the time, whereas I would have thought podcast listeners are more loyal and possibly more frustrated by the repetition. But I don't know, is this a new area, the whole area of actually researching the effectiveness of podcast advertising, do you think?
Yeah, there absolutely is. I mean, and it's interesting. I used to work in radio. I used to write radio commercials, and the opportunities to hear the frequency thing that you're talking about there was something very much that, frankly, we didn't really have an awful lot of research on for radio advertising either. Podcasting is more. It can be more targeted because you can actually work out, has this person heard this ad before? How many times have they heard it as they download that particular show? So you can do some quite interesting things with that. Not very many podcasting companies do, I'll be honest, but nevertheless, you can do a little bit of that. I think that there have been some research. One of the pieces of research was done by a company called Podscribe, who are a company that do ad attribution. So they actually work out how successful a podcast has been by watching you listening to a show and then watching you visit the website or buying a product afterwards. And what they have found is that host-read ads, as you were talking about, work twice as well as others. So that's a good start. That's why we can charge more than twice for them. But also, if you play the ad more than twice in the same show, the second play of that ad works 40% as well as the first play, which is really interesting. So actually being able to go back and go, okay, you need to make sure that you are, if you're playing the same ad to somebody three, four, five times, then actually the fourth or the fifth time, it's not going to work anywhere near as the first play did. Now, that kind of goes against some of the radio training that I had in the past. But I think the difference is probably that on radio, your job as a creative the person making the ads is to make your ads stand out because radio is by and large used as the background medium. So the first job that you have is to get people to actually have a listen, turn up the radio, and what's this all about then? That's your first job. Whereas in podcasting, they're doing that anyway. So creative can be very, very different. And therefore, from that point of view, the success of a podcast can be very different as well. So I think there is some fascinating data-led research, which is much more data-led, I think, than many of the research that you see on broadcast media, which has to be either recall based, or qual rather than actual, quant. So I think that that's fascinating to end up seeing.
I guess in a number of markets, as you'll know, the radio currencies aren't measuring individual spots. They're measuring, diary-based surveys over time periods. So there's also that opportunity in podcasting to, as you say, to actually, try and work out the effectiveness of individual spots and things like reach and frequency. So it's going to be interesting to see how that stacks up. But anyway,
No, and I And I think also on the other side, but some of the larger platforms, whether it's Apple or Spotify, and there are a few more, actually know when people skip through the ads, how many people that we lose from attrition when the ad break comes on, how many people we actually lose from that, and so on and so forth. So you can end up seeing this really detailed piece of information, minute by minute, or even less in some cases, of where people were listening and what they actually skipped through. So again, data that I would have loved in my old world in working for a radio station, that would have been incredible data to have.
Talking of radio stations themselves and broadcasters specifically, how are they responding, do you think, to the challenge from particularly independent podcast publishers like Goalhanger in the UK, but also, Spotify, actually creating content? Do you think the broadcasters are now in what's the word, a more evolved phase of how they're actually integrating podcasts that they're offering?
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely action from most of the large from most of the large radio broadcasters who have realized, well, we need to be very active in this space. Now, there are a number of different ways of how those radio broadcasters are becoming more active. Some of them are spending much more time on individual shows which are made for podcast only. You can see, iHeart, for example, in the US doing a lot of specific shows that they may broadcast them on a Sunday evening on a radio station somewhere in the middle of nowhere, but really they are there as pieces of content for podcast. So we're seeing a lot of that going on. And of course, what that means for an advertiser's point of view is that when you go and you talk to your iHeart salesperson, then your iHeart salesperson will be selling, yes, you should be advertising on broadcast radio, of course, because that's where the reach is. But you should also be advertising on podcasts as well, because that's where you can really start targeting individual communities. So I think that there's been some benefit in terms of that. The other way of broadcasters looking at podcasting has been to produce stuff which they are keeping as exclusive on their own platforms. The BBC being one example in the UK, but there are plenty of others, including Bauer across most of the Nordics, many others in other European countries, where they're actually focusing on exclusive content which pulls people to their app. And of course, once they're on a company built app, then there's registration walls which you can put in there. Then there's much more information that they've got in terms of who you are as a person. So we're seeing really a nice and an interesting mix from larger broadcasters, smaller broadcasters, about how they are focusing on how on what is actually changing in this space.
Yeah, it's interesting. We rewind 10 years. The BBC was very, very much an advocate of platform neutrality, that, their content should be as widely available and as easily accessible on whatever platform to as many license fee payers as possible. The BBC sounds, as you say, in recent years, it definitely seems to have been more of a pivot towards, we want you to be on our platform. Either via exclusives, as you say, or just generally via a desire to have people that they can build a relationship with. Is there a trade-off there between the ability to build that relationship, but also limiting potentially your audience? So it's interesting, Channel 4, for example, in the TV world, were very much of that opinion that you needed to get people onto their video platform, as but then started to realize young people were on YouTube and they just weren't willing to shift to another platform to consume the content. So in the last year or two, have opened up their YouTube channel in the recognition they're not going to get everyone on their own platform. Do you think that is that a challenge for the BBC, do you think, or
Yeah,
It
I mean, candidly, I think the BBC is doing this the wrong way. And if you pay for a television license fee, which you have to by law, then you should be able to get the BBC's new content as soon as it's released in a place where you prefer to get it. And I think it's interesting when you look at, for example, Radio France. They have a very different strategy, and their strategy, which I think is probably the right one, is all of their new stuff goes everywhere. So if it's a daily show, then it's available absolutely everywhere, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Deezer, on any of the other podcast platforms. New shows are available everywhere for a week. And after that week, then the archive is pulled back just to the Radio France app. And that seems to me to be a better way of doing things because you are then really maximizing the brand new stuff. But for people that want to dive deeper into the back catalogue, then all of that is kept locked up in the Radio France app. And I think that would, to be honest, I think that would earn the BBC more money, given that their podcasts are monetized by advertising outside the UK. I think that they could actually earn more money that way by making their new stuff as available as possible and then pulling back the archive into the BBC Sounds app. So I think it is interesting looking at the different ways that different broadcasters are doing things. The BBC Sounds app also only has BBC content in there, with one or two exceptions. You have a look at, for example, the Global app, and that is another large broadcaster, of course, in the UK. And they have an awful lot of other shows in their app alongside the global shows that they end up running. There are probably advertising benefits for that. So, again, lots of different strategies going on right now. And I'm fascinated to learn and understand more about those particular strategies, because I think that that is one way that every single broadcaster is doing different things, and at some point we should be learning what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, it is absolutely fascinating at the moment, because podcasting has hit that critical mass now. I mean, people talk about it like it's a new medium, but I think it's celebrating its 20th anniversary, in terms of the actual invention of the iPod, which is where it gets its name from. But in terms of the monetization of it, there's still lots of different approaches to how you actually go about that, including one of the big phenomena, certainly in the UK. I'm interested to know if it's happening elsewhere in the world, is the live podcast events, where you're getting to the extreme where people are selling out the O2 Arena in London to sit and listen to the live version of a podcast. Do you think is that, think, a temporary phenomenon, or is this going to be very much part of the motivation for talent? Not just the advertising revenue, but I'm assuming it's quite cheap to put on a podcast event. All you need is a microphone and some seats, and then the
Yes,
rest.
I think you're right. I mean, and you need to hire the venue and everything else. I think just before I answer that, I'll just challenge you slightly on podcasting. Our podcasting is reaching mainstream. I wish that was the case, but I'm not so sure quite yet. Podcasting accounts, according to Radjar, in the UK, podcasting accounts for 6% of all time with audio. So broadcast radio is in the 60s or 70%. And that is not too dissimilar here in Australia, where they're working it out with a very different methodology, or in the US. So I think in terms of time spent listening, that's the stat that I am much more interested in covering than just, total weekly reach, which is, of course, going up and is a nice number. But, time spent listening is the thing that I'm fascinated at watching, and I don't see too much increase in that over the last 4 or 5 years. So So I certainly think that there's, quite a long way to go. You're talking about, live shows. I know that The Rest Is Politics is running. I think they were going to be calling themselves election specials, which of course has gone away ever since the slightly earlier election. But they are doing things like the O2 Arena and things like that. So they are doing particularly well, and they sold out very, very quickly, from my understanding. There was something that was last month from a podcast called Acquired, which is a business podcast. And they filled San Francisco's Chase Arena with more than 6,000 fans. 6,000 people, just listeners to a particular podcast, and they wanted to come along. Partially because Mark Zuckerberg was speaking. Daniel Ek was also a surprise additional guest, but also, just because they felt that there was some form of community there of the different people who are listening to that individual shows. And I think that, again, just points to the intimacy of audio that we've known for years and years and years. And particularly on-demand audio, which means that you can catch up at a time to suit you rather than at a time that the radio programmers want to stick the output out. So my suspicion is that we're going to see more of those in the future. There are very good sales, there are very good, revenue income earner. And it's interesting to see some of the big deals recently about podcasting has seen them specifically, the companies who are acquiring these particular shows have seen them specifically saying, we're acquiring this show, we are going to be doing live events, we are going to be doing merch, as well as obviously selling the advertising in that particular show. So I suspect that we're going to see more of that as we move forward. Not quite sure whether that is a fantastic evening out, but who knows?
I've been to them. I went to the first Rest Is Politics event at the Royal Albert Hall, which was really good.
Yeah.
Although I was in the fourth row, I did wonder how people at the back of the hall who would have been primarily watching it on a video screen, because it's not like a rock concert. It's two guys sat on chairs.
Yeah.
I've been to that, and particularly at the O2 Arena where you'd need binoculars. But
Yeah.
yeah. It's an, it
No,
is an.
and also seeing live shows as well. So The Rest Is Politics being a great example in that that was part of Channel 4's general election coverage. The Rest Is Politics is doing a online, they're not broadcasting it anywhere, but they're doing an online video, live video show to coincide with the US general election, the US presidential election, I should say. So that's going to be a fascinating watch as well. And I think, more of this live video, as podcasting is moving inexorably to have a video component in quite a lot of that, is going to be very interesting too.
Definitely. Finally, we're focused on preparing for Venice at ASI headquarters. But what are you hoping to learn specifically from the speakers in your session?
I'm fascinated at, I mean, I love going to the ASI conference. I find it a fascinating conference. It's so unique in terms of conferences that I go to because it is there really focusing on research. And there are lots of people who claim, like me, to be fair, who claim that they've got lots of wonderful numbers, but they just steal those numbers from the researchers, and the researchers aren't normally allowed out. And so I find it a really fascinating event. What I'm looking forward to hearing is audience attitudes towards on demand as a whole in terms of the audio side of the ASI conference. But I'm also looking forward, particularly around the people who are talking in the podcast section, that there's some fascinating work going on in the UK, and I'm really interested to learn more about what's going on there. That's a market that I think the Americans can learn an awful lot from. So hearing from John at Rajar a little bit more about that, but also hearing about how programmatic advertising works. and how brand safety works, because brand safety is one of those really interesting things that we inherently have brand safety for broadcast radio, because nobody apart from the stupid Australians, nobody will be broadcasting, very unpleasant things on the radio. We're pretty good at doing that in this country. But elsewhere, radio is doesn't have swearing. Is very buttoned up in terms of some of the subjects that it covers. Podcasting is not like that, and podcasting can cover some very challenging output. And so brand safety has been put into place, which essentially means that if you are an advertiser, you can be relatively sure that you're not going to be advertising next to some of that more salacious content. The question, though, is whether or not that's very American, very driven by American culture and American, feelings towards language and everything else, and whether or not it's actually doing a good job. So fascinated to hear from Rocky from Soundstack to learn more about how that bit works as well.
Well, we're looking forward to enjoying that session in Venice. It's on the Wednesday, the 6th of November. Tickets are available on the website, yes to say. And also, we'll put a link to James's newsletter and to the PodNews podcast in the show notes as well. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us, James, and we look forward to catching up in Venice.
Great pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.